Hi, this is Joe Castellano. Welcome to the San Francisco 49ers Extra Podcast on thesportsvirus.com, featuring former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Brought to you by TPC Harding Park, the only public golf course in San Francisco offering golfers the opportunity to play where the pros play, in the home of the 2020 PGA Championship. We'll talk about the 49ers' 19-16 overtime win over St. Louis, the firing of head coach Jim Tomsula, and look at the entire 2015 season with Steve Bono in just a moment. But first, I want to tell you about my favorite golf course, TPC Harding Park in San Francisco. As I was thumbing through Golf Digest, I found that TPC Harding Park is recognized as one of the best places to play in America. And that didn't surprise me too much because I love the majestic layout and beautiful amenities. My San Francisco resident card gives me a great rate at TPC Harding Park, and I get to play where PGA Tour icons Jack Nicklaus, Phil Mickelson, and Tiger Woods have played. Now, if I can only score like them, okay, I'll stop dreaming and get to our guest. And joining us now, Steve Bono, and we'll talk a little bit about the 49ers overtime win over St. Louis, 19-16, and then we'll get to the meat of our discussion, which is the firing of Jim Tomsula and what the 49ers do going forward. But Steve, let's start with the game. As the 49ers win, they actually hurt themselves as far as draft position, but you know, they go into the offseason with a little bit of a feel-good situation to win that game against St. Louis. So, you know, just tell us your thoughts on the game, and especially Blaine Gabbert, because he was trying to make his last imprint here on this team with this game. And I don't know, one way or another, if he really did so, I don't know that you could say, oh, yeah, he's a starting quarterback now after that. What did you think?
Well, I don't know if you could say he's the starting quarterback going forward. He's definitely in competition for it. He impressed. I know that for a fact. From the inside, he impressed. Some of the coaches did a comparison that over the last seven games that he played, better than 90% of the guys. That they compared him to. So he definitely impressed, and he played well on Sunday. I mean, he made some ridiculous plays. The one at the top of mind is the third down. Guys got him by the ankles. I mean, when he throws it, I think, oh, no, but hit Anquan right in stride. I mean, amazing play.
Yeah, that was one of his best plays of the year. That and the Chicago game, he definitely came up with some really good plays. Yeah. I mean, I guess the problem that a lot of people have, and I'm sort of in this camp, I can't go forward saying he's my starting quarterback because there's just so much conservative play. And I don't know if it's just the way the plays are being called, but a lot of it is him, you know, he's looking to the right to a running back or in the flat, and he's hardly ever looking upfield. I don't know if he's not capable or if that's just the way he wants to play it, but it is frustrating to a lot of people watching.
I'm sure it is. Nobody likes, unfortunately, most people don't like to see the checkdowns and all that kind of stuff, but that's where you live as a quarterback. The problem was and still is, there aren't any more games for the 49ers. The problem is that they couldn't get a receiver to get off single coverage. They couldn't get a receiver to get open. That's the bottom line. If somebody was a corner was running man to man with them, they struggled.
Well, you know, you look at the whole season. I think Bolden is the one guy who's dependable. He's not the speediest guy, but he's dependable. Outside of that, Torrey Smith didn't have a really good year. I know they didn't target him much, but how much was he open? And they really just didn't have any receivers that were go-to for either Kaepernick or Gabbert.
I completely agree. I know that they struggled with that the whole season. So you couple that with an offensive line that got better, but that struggled the whole season, and so you couple receivers not getting open. That means the quarterback's holding the ball. That means there's more pressure on the offensive line, and you get a season where you're 5-11.
Yeah, which is
and you get an offense that's unfortunately 32nd in the league. I mean, they got a couple. I think they had 10 running backs. I heard 10 running backs.
That's amazing.
On the roster.
Yeah.
At different points and times during the season. I mean, some of those young kids came in and played well. I mean,
Drone. Yeah, he was pretty good.
Drone Harris. I thought he was.
He was really good.
He was on five teams this year.
That's amazing. He was really good. He had some big runs.
I thought so too. I thought he was. I thought he got to the hole nicely, and he, you know, his quickness was really good. Basically, you had people that were on the street who turned out to be better than guys that you had on your opening day roster.
Yeah, that's one of the things about a week 17. Yeah, like a guy on the street like Harris, who the last few weeks helped him out. That's one of the things about the end of the season that was valuable. You see what he could do.
Yeah.
I mean, he had 67 rush yards, 86 reception yards. He had those big runs, 22, 25, 47 yards. So he looks like a keeper, a guy that you could use next year.
I agree. I completely agree. You know, and what does Trent do? Does he go into the free agent market and look for skilled guys, into the draft for skilled guys, or does he go into the free agent market looking for front seven people, defensive and offensively? That's what they need to figure out. I mean, that's obviously after getting a coach.
Right, exactly. I mean, yeah, there's so many issues that to prioritize is difficult, I think. But getting back to quarterback, which is, of course, what you're most familiar with, I mean, that's to me, it's going to be a tough decision as far as whether or not to stick with Gabbard. I don't know that you're going to be a great winning team with him. He came out and he made some comments that he's very confident. He said, I'm going to be the starting quarterback going into the offseason. That's his approach. I'm going to take this team and run with it. And that's what you want to hear.
And it should be. That absolutely should be his approach. And, if they go and draft a guy in the first round, I hope that his approach is that, hey, look, I've been in this league for 5 years now. It's going to take a lot for you to beat me out. And that's the way of this league, if you do, then fine, we're a better team for it, Blaine deserves to go into this off season thinking that he's the starting quarterback going forward.
And we've talked about this before. I guess one of the big issues that a lot of people have is on a third down play where he's not throwing to the first down marker. But again, we've talked about it where the receiver has to, get to that first down marker, or sometimes he's got to make a play. And I think that's kind of like just a sticking point for a lot of people, just looking at, he just doesn't convert those third downs the way that you'd like to see. I don't know that that's totally his fault, but how do you see that?
It's not all his fault. That's for damn sure. Again, it goes back to receivers not being able to get open, and the Niners getting stuck in third and seven plus. I don't know how many times in this past game, but I know a lot over the season. And those aren't easy to make up. And a lot of times the throws or the routes that get those first downs on third and long are slants or something quick where you can get the ball into a guy's hands and let him make a play with his legs, as opposed to, running a deep comeback or running a deep in or something where, okay, that's fine if it's, that's fine if it's Jerry Rice out there or John Taylor,
right?
Because that DB's got to cover DB's got to cover the deep ball as well, and if he's at all scared, that deep in or deep out is going to be open by several yards. So when there isn't that threat, that deep threat, or that DB feels that there isn't any threat from that receiver at all, then he's going to sit at the first down marker and say, okay, beat me here.
Right.
I know you got to get to here. So a lot of times, the best throws are quick throws on third and long where you get it in the receiver's hands and let him make a play with his legs.
Yeah, I mean, I guess when they're not converted, then people start to turn to the quarterback and say, hey, how come you're not throwing longer? But if you're converting those and then, you know, everything looks good and you're making those plays, then it's a different story.
It's a totally different story. And again, it could be a, you know, it could be a little, you know, two yard drag route to a tight end or a back, but he gets the ball in his hands quickly. He gets his shoulders turned upfield and he runs somebody over, and next thing you know, it's a first down.
Yeah. Well, we saw a short pass. Now, I don't think this was on third down, but remember the Patton pass was kind of in the flat, and he turned that into a huge gain.
Totally.
Yeah.
Totally. I mean, that's just a lot of times those are the best throws. Those are the high percentage throws, and give the playmakers a chance to make a play. Everybody loves to see the deep ball, you know, a post route or a go route, but you know, those are usually shots that are taken on first down or second and short, where it's a something off of a play action where you can get a safety to bite and take a deep shot. But when you don't have a running game, then those aren't that great either.
Now, you know, I mentioned Gabbert. There's the other quarterback, Colin Kaepernick. His status is completely up in the air. And now he's got extra injuries we didn't know about. I mean, we didn't know about the shoulder. We didn't know about the thumb. Now, all of a sudden, there's this thumb he might have to have surgery. That's his throwing hand, his right thumb. And then he's telling everybody that he has a rod in his lower left leg that nobody knew about. This is crazy. And the 49ers, to keep him, I think I read that it was $13.7 million to keep him. So it doesn't look like they would. You've said all along that you'd be shocked if they kept him. You still feel that way?
I do, unless I think his only saving grace here is Chip Kelly. I mean,
right.
If they hire Chip Kelly, then I'm sure Chip Kelly. I mean, if I were Chip Kelly, I'd say, okay, I want Colin here.
Because he's the type of quarterback for his offense.
If there's anybody
that
can run Chip Kelly's offense, it's Colin. but I think Colin's goal, unfortunately, Colin's goal is to figure out how to not be healthy on April 1st and get paid $13.1 million.
Right, that's what it is. There's that deadline if he's still injured and he doesn't pass a physical on April the 1st, then he gets money. I don't know if he gets all that $13 million. I think that's if the 49ers keep him, but he gets a bunch of money.
So, I mean, that's his goal right now. I mean, that's obvious with all these injuries and things. It's really unfortunate. I mean, I've never seen. I mean, I understand that money's hard to make up. I get that. But I don't think I've ever seen anybody's motivation be so strong as his is.
By the way, it's $11.9 million if he's still on the Niners roster on April the 1st, which would happen if he's injured. So, that everything points at that date as far as he's concerned.
Yeah.
Well, let's get into the whole coaching situation. But first, before we get to the candidates, and there's a lot of them, first of all, Jim Tomsula. And, you know, you had said a few weeks ago that you'd be sort of surprised if they did fire him, the ownership, because they had stuck their neck out to hire him. So what was your reaction when you heard about this after the game on Sunday?
I was disappointed. There was a very, very, very strong rumor around the stadium, in the stadium, early on in the day that he had already been fired before the game, which turned out not to be true, but obviously he was let go later on. I was very disappointed. I was going to be even more disappointed if they had done that and then made another move with others that I won't mention, that we've talked about.
Well, the coaching staff is intact right now until the head coach comes in, right?
That's the coaching staff's intact until a new coach comes in.
Right.
Right. And then that coach should be able to pick their staff, and that's how it is, and that's how it should be. But you were
disappointed in Tomsula's firing. I mean, tell us why. I mean, most people are thinking he didn't do a good job.
I mean, they obviously he was the default. I mean, that's not a nice thing to say about a person who's a good person.
Right.
But he would be the first person to tell you that I was the default. Nobody wanted the job after everything that happened with Harbaugh last year. I mean, that's obvious. I mean, they interviewed a lot of people and they were the last ones to hire somebody. So, you know, he was your default, and you, they, you know, Jed talked about, you know, we want to make this a classy organization. You know, we want to win with class, and that's great. That's the way it should be. And so you hired Jim Tomsula to get rid of some troubled people. He did a good job of that. But the cupboards are, you know, the cupboards are thin. You know, at the end of the day, I mean, at the end of the day, if you have the talent, yeah, the coach matters because they got to put it all together, but you have to have the talent.
Well, let me ask you this, Steve. You spent a lot of time in the NFL. What makes a great coach? Because from my perspective, just looking at Tomsula, I think he's a great motivator. But the other aspects of being a head coach, I mean, there's so much to it. You know, it's not just fundamentals. There's the adjustments. There's dealing with the media, which I didn't think he was great at doing. He's not really a great speaker, let's put it that way.
Right.
But what are, in your opinion, if you had to pick the criteria, okay, this really makes a great coach. You know, Bill Walsh, obviously top of the list for the 49ers. What are the criteria? What are the aspects of a head coach that are most important?
Well, I think you know, let's go back and look at, I mean, yeah, we can say Bill was a great coach because he did it.
Yeah,
so we can say that.
Right.
He was a great coach. What made him a great coach? Personality. He's a people person. He had a plan and he had a process that you either adhered to or you were gone.
Mm-hmm.
Bottom line, whether you were a talent or not.
My way or the highway.
It's my way or the highway, and you got to get guys to buy into it. Obviously, they did. They had, and you know, you think back. I wasn't part of the team, but you think back to. I've heard enough history. You know, you think back to the late '70s, the early '80s. You had he brought in some veteran players that bought in and that taught the younger guys, the younger guys that became great players. They taught those guys the way to become a professional, how to work, how to play, how to carry yourself. You know, that core of guys, unfortunately, is gone from the 49ers right now. I would say the last of them is Joe Staley. You know, thinking back to, the drafts of, you know, Alex picking up Justin Smith, Frank Gore.
Maybe Navarro Bowman is in that camp. I mean, he had a great year.
Yeah, I don't know him. Very possibly. I don't know his relationship, his character in the locker room.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see who else is in there. I'm obviously missing some. Anyway, I mean that's a few that are coming to top of mind. But you don't have you've lost a lot of those guys. So yes, I think that Jim's, I know Jim's a good guy. Is he Is he the best head coach? No, honestly, I don't think so. And he would probably be the first one to tell you that. But, you know, his job is, Coach Donahue always used to say this, when I was at UCLA, Coach Donahue would always say, my job is to hire good assistant coaches to handle the media, handle the alumni.
Right.
And when you looked at it, Coach Donahue was a great coach.
He was great at that. Yeah, no doubt.
He was great at it. And he allowed the assistant coaches to be the coaches. He had great recruiters. We had a ton of talent. So, you know, did Jim do that well? I think he did the best he could with the coaching staff. If he were still the head coach, my guess is there'd be a few changes. I don't know that for a fact, but that's my guess. You know, you're trying to always update your update and get better all the time. So, you know, where do they go going forward? You need a personality. I mean, somebody that's going to come in here and somebody's got to come in and create a culture. I would tell Jed this to his face. I'm disappointed that he keeps saying that we need a coach that can win Super Bowls.
Right.
Okay. Winning Super Bowls not easy to do. Okay, yeah, everybody wants to win the Super Bowl.
Got to be in position to do it, yeah.
You have to be in position to do it. We need a head coach that can come in and create a culture that has a plan, that has a process, and has the people.
I think a lot of the media is focused, which I don't agree with. They're focusing on Jim Harbaugh, and they're looking back and the mistake that you let him go. And, you know, because the 49ers, maybe they already had what you're talking about, but you can't go there. I mean, that's over with. You got to go forward.
Done. Yeah, it's done. And you know, Jim obviously is a great coach. But his MO is that after a few years, he's worn you out. I mean, he wore the players out. He wore out the people around him. That's just his personality.
Right.
You know. But to his defense, he had a plan, he had a process, and he had people. So,
yeah.
Those people were here. I mean, that's going back to my point of the nucleus. You know, Jim Harbaugh had, you know, Alex Smith and Joe Staley and Justin Smith and Patrick Willis, you know, and Vernon Davis. There's others, obviously, that were veteran leaders, but that was a strong nucleus of people.
Yeah. I think the players do appreciate the approach that Jim Tomsula had as far as just being a player's coach. And the quote from Trent Baalke, who, by the way, kept his job. Some people thought maybe he'd get fired. But he said, you know, when you're 5-11, it's not all coaching. And that's true.
No,
I mean, you know, you had injuries. You had personnel that, you know, wasn't up to snuff.
Right. They're not going to fire 53 guys. They're going to fire one.
Right.
And that's just the way it is. Do they have enough talent? No, they don't. Do they have some good coaches? They do. Jim Tomsula is also one of them. So, you know, again, back to, you know, I wish I could, like, just sit down with Jed and say, okay, Jed, you need a head coach that can create a culture. And when you create the culture, then the culture will help you breed championships. You know, so
it's a process. I mean, it's not going to happen overnight.
It's a total process.
Yeah.
It's not going to happen overnight. I'm not going to go into what I, you know, where I really feel the problem is. I think we've talked about that. You know where that is.
Right.
And I'm surprised he still has his job, I have to admit. Jed Amen asked him yesterday if he was concerned that did you listen to the interview?
Oh yeah, I listened to the whole press conference.
I mean, they asked him if he was concerned about not being able to get or interview quality candidates. I think I don't remember the exact question, but there was something along those lines. And Jed just, I mean, it just like blew it off. Like, no, I'm not concerned about that. Well, it needs to be, because they didn't interview quality people last year, you know, or if they did, I probably shouldn't say it that
Adam
way.
Adam Gase, yeah.
I mean, that's a young guy with no head coaching experience,
right?
Yeah, I mean, that's not what we need. So I don't know Adam Gase, but no offense to him, but that's not what we need. But if I were Jed, I would be concerned about that. You know, I'm not getting second or third interviews with quality, experienced head coaches. You know,
that was a problem.
I think that's an issue, and you know how I feel about where that issue lies. So.
Well, we'll go over some of these candidates. But before we do that, there's one more thing about Jed York, though. Just the way he came off in the press conference, because a couple of bullet points, I thought. One was that he really does consult a lot with Eddie D, or at least now, you know, in this important time
he is.
That seems to be a good thing. I mean,
should
be doing that. He talked about social media and not tweeting as much, and that also seems to be a positive
because it
can be a distraction, although I think hiding from the media the entire year was not a good idea. You know, you said you were accountable, then we don't hear from you, but the tweeting thing seems like a good idea to back off that.
I completely agree. Jed, he said he's accountable, so he's got to stand up and shoulder, and Balky's the same way. If he's accountable and he's in charge, he can't hide. And he hit for the last.
He did.
He hit.
He did. And here's the other thing. A lot of speculation was out there that maybe the Yorks would sell. And he said, my family owned this team before I was born.
Yeah.
They'll own the team after I'm gone.
So there's
that.
I thought that was a lot of. Personally, I thought that was a lot of speculation. Who knows?
Yeah.
Who knows?
All right. So
that's a situation. No one can control other than the Yorks.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so how about these candidates? I mean, there's a lot of names that some of the reporters have come up with. But as far as, you know, big guys that have the experience, you know, one name on the list, he's still employed by the Saints, is Sean Payton. You know, there's a guy who's won. He's won the Super Bowl.
Yep.
Hugh Jackson, he's been the head coach of the Raiders. Todd Haley, he's been a head coach. Those guys are both offensive coordinators. And, you know, you think the offensive mindset.
Yeah.
Just out of those names, I mean, are you thinking that, you know, some of those guys are good candidates?
I think Sean Payton's a great candidate. I think he would – obviously, he's been there. He's done it. It would get us back to a – first of all, he's an offensive-minded guy.
Right.
That's key in my mind. He brings in a system that's pretty – you know, it's got a lot of West Coast to it. I think that's a great candidate, honestly. I don't know him. The others, Todd Haley, I think it's a mistake just from what I've heard of personality, just way too abrasive.
Right.
Yeah.
What about Hugh Jackson?
I don't know Hugh Jackson, and he's been around forever. I'm not sure what the situation was over in Oakland. But he didn't seem to be able to get them to respond, them being the players or anyone else in the organization. I don't know that for a fact, but that's just from afar. That's what it seemed like. Did you mention a fourth?
Well, no, I've got some more here. How about here's some candidates that I don't think should be considered, although they're big names. And they've been around a long time. You know, Mike Shanahan, Mike Holmgren, these guys, they haven't coached now in a little while, but their names are out there. Or Tom Coughlin, he just got done with the Giants. But again, I mean, older guy.
Mistake.
Yeah, it seems like a mistake.
Coughlin, no. I've never been a fan, unfortunately. He recruited me like 35 years ago.
that's a long time ago.
Yeah. Obviously, Shanahan and Holmgren I played for. Holmgren would not take this job unless he had full control.
Which is not going to happen.
That's
right.
Not going to happen. No. Mike Holmgren, I would be absolutely shocked if Mike Holmgren took this job.
Same with Shanahan.
Shanahan, I don't think.
And then Chip Kelly, who just got fired by the Eagles, and he seems to be more of a control guy. I don't want to say control freak, but I don't think he'd be a good fit there. Plus, as you mentioned, you better like Kaepernick because it seems like he would try to get Kaepernick to be the quarterback.
There are some connections. Tommy Gamble, who's back here now, is I don't know his exact title, but. Director of Personnel,
mm-hmm.
Under Baalke was in Philadelphia with Chip Kelly. When they gave Kelly the power, they ended up firing Tommy, and he came back here. But, my understanding was that he's had a good relationship with Chip Kelly.
Kelly's players are, some of the players kind of had an axe to grind against him. He wasn't a real player guy.
Yeah. Personally, I wouldn't want to see that just because I don't want to see that offense.
Exactly.
To be fully honest.
Yeah. Just hurry up.
It's boring.
It worked in college, but it hasn't worked in the NFL.
I don't know. I hope not have to see it. And I just think that there's a whole media circus that comes with it. I don't see that one happening just because, I think there'll be a lot of distractions around it.
Well, I'm sure
there's people push. I'm sure, I think about all these kinds of things. I'm sure Parag's pushing for it because if Chip Kelly comes, then Cap stays, and that makes Parag look better because he did the contract with Parag. And
right.
I said Parag twice. I meant Colin with Kaepernick. He did Kaepernick's contract, so that makes Parag look better if they keep Cap and all that kind of. You know how those personality things.
That could play into it, I guess.
Oh, absolutely, they all play into it.
There's a lot of guys on the list that are coordinators or even a head coach in college who actually has done a pretty good job. Jim Mora Jr. at UCLA, his name has come up. What do you think of that? Or just, the guy who hasn't coached as a head coach, but he's been a good coordinator, like a Mike Shula. He's the Panthers' offensive coordinator. They're having a great year, that kind of thing.
The more one I'm going to have to leave alone.
you're a UCLA guy, right?
he's done a great job at UCLA.
Yeah,
I'll just leave it at that.
I begrudgingly agree with you. being a USC guy.
That's right. Ashula, he's been around. He's been around. I think he's a little bit younger than I am, maybe. But someone like that. Okay, he hasn't been a head coach, but he's been around this game his whole life. He played it. I'd be fine with somebody like that. Even though he's a first time guy, it's just somebody that I would think gets it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just because he's been around it his whole life.
Yeah, and then, so there's not only Shula, but there's. Kyle Shanahan, so he's been around it too, and he's the Falcons' offensive coordinator.
Yeah.
But yeah,
I think that was the whole problem with Falcons' offense. So I think they fell apart. I think Matty Ice struggled with them.
Yeah, they fell apart.
That's just my take from afar.
Well, it's mostly offensive guys. Do you agree with that? I mean, if it's not,
got to be an offensive guy.
Yeah, if it's not a former head coach, just a guy who's an offensive coordinator now. Yeah.
Got to be an offensive guy because you got to. I mean, let's face it. This organization is built on the West Coast offense. It's built on offense. you it has to be an offensive personality, just because that's I'm not bashing defense. You got to have the best defense in the league to win a championship. One of the best, top five for sure.
Right.
No question, but it just the mentality of the San Francisco 49ers needs to be attack.
Well,
throw the ball.
And it sounds like, okay, after all these names and all that, I mean, you're going to have a plan A, B, C, D, but it sounds like plan A is Sean Payton. I mean, he's not going to be easy to get.
Okay, it is. In my mind, it is, because Trent Baalke, connection to Parcells, Payton.
Right.
Simple.
So it makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sure that it's yes. I'm sure that that is. I'm guessing that that is plan A.
And if you had to pick a plan A in the draft, I mean, as you said, we said pick number 7. If Goff's still available, you take him, or you look at other areas.
I think you got to look at other areas. I really do.
Like you said, offensive line.
Yeah.
You know,
not that you're not going to take a quarterback, some of the things that I nothing against Goff, other than some of the things that I've heard that he's never called a play in the huddle. He's never had a playbook. He's never lined up under center. That's a problem.
Yeah, that could be a problem.
Yeah.
Never called a play in the huddle.
That's what I've heard.
Weren't you doing that in high school?
in college, he never has.
Wow.
It just signals to the receivers.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, so. Well, we'll see. I mean, yeah, it seems like offensive line, or like you said, they have to decide skill position. They may, go after a receiver.
Yeah.
A lot of areas.
You need some offense and defensive linemen. You need a young Anquan Boldin.
Yeah, he's been really dependable for them.
Oh,
yeah.
Dude is
getting older.
Yeah. I mean, let's face it. He's been playing this league for, what, 12 years? Maybe, I don't know, 13 years?
Something like that, yeah.
I mean, he's good.
Yeah, he is definitely a go-to guy for sure.
Yeah.
Well, Steve, it was a tough season, 5-11. I don't know that we expected that. We figured it would be a more of a transition year, but hopefully – next year is a lot more exciting. I really appreciate everything you coming on, all the time that we spent together on these
fun.
Podcasts. It's been great. So
yeah,
I really appreciate
it's been
it. Thanks.
Fun. Yeah, I wish. Well, thank you. And I kind of thought. I think you and I talked about this in the beginning that, okay, hopefully you can be 8-8, but you're probably going to be 6-10, but pretty close to that.
Yeah.
Yeah, you need to be 10-6 to get in the playoffs, but they need a handful of good players.
Yeah, hopefully next year is a lot better. Look forward to it. Look forward to next year.
Yeah.
That's former 49ers quarterback Steve Bono. Thanks to him and to all of you for listening throughout the 2015 season. For now, I'm Joe Castellano. We'll see you again in 2016 on thesportsvirus.com with San Francisco 49ers Extra.